Hello, I'm Paul Gambaccini. Welcome to The Invisible Man, the Rod Temperton story.
He's got a gift that is, really, really rare. I think Rod is one of the greats.
Rod is like a Stevie Wonder. He's one of the best around for me.
He really is a total genius, and I love him for the fact that he's so humble.
He had his finger on the trigger for knowing what group of notes to put together that everybody can remember all over the world. It was uncanny.
I couldn't believe these songs were coming out of any Englishman.
He's one of the best and the brightest.
I could tell he ate, slept, and drank music. He's making me the star. That's the most valuable kind of person there is.
Reminded me of Doctor Who, long trench coat, scarf, and everything.
Rod Temperton is different from anyone else I've ever known. They call Rod Temperton the Invisible Man.
Over the next hour, we'll hear the story of one of the most successful yet least known songwriters in popular music. A white musician from Cleethorpes who redefined R&B, the man behind some of the biggest hits in music history, and a songwriter whose work on Thriller helped to make it the best-selling album of all time. Up to now, the name Rod Temperton has remained little known to the general public. He has stayed modest about his own remarkable success. But in this program, we throw the spotlight on one of Britain's greatest songwriters. As well as the man himself, we'll hear from industry giants like Quincy Jones, Michael McDonald, and George Benson. Rod Temperton was born in 1947 in post-war Cleethorpes. As he remembers, music was in his bones from an early age.
My father wasn't the kind of person who would read you a story before you went off to sleep. He used to put a transistor radio in the crib, right on the pillow, and I would go to sleep listening to Radio Luxembourg. And I think somehow that had an influence.
Ted Gledhill was Rod's music teacher at school.
He was always very keen on music. He came to prominence when, during the annual music competitions, I introduced a pop section. Now, this was a bit unknown at the time because, in fact, pop music in the early 60s in a grammar school was, in fact, not encouraged. But Rod formed a group, and he was the drummer in it, and they did very well, and that seemed to give him an outlet for all his innate talent.
I used to skive off school occasionally, and while Dad was at work, get in the living room with my snare drum and my cymbal and play along to the test card, which was all kinds of music they'd be playing continuously. Watch out, Funk's a mouse. And it's gonna get to stay down. Cause it can smoke the building out and make you feel like screaming.
Too Hot to Handle by Heatwave. More of them in a moment. On leaving school, Rod started working in the office of a frozen food company in Grimsby. It was an unlikely start for the man who would go on to provide hits for the biggest star in popular music.
I remember when Michael Jackson toured England, I don't know, about 15 years ago. Either the Daily Mirror or the Sun, I don't remember which one, sent reporters up to my hometown. It was a great headline, and I've still got it. Grimsby Fish Filleter reels in fortune for Wacko Jacko.
It wasn't long before Rod left his job to become a full-time musician, having moved from drums to keyboards. He played in several dance bands, and this took him to Worms, a small town in Germany. It was there that his career began to take off when, in 1974, he answered an advert from an American singer called Johnny Wilder Jr. Johnny was putting together a multinational band, Heatwave.
I was stony broke. I applied to an advert in the Melody Maker, and they came around and knocked on my door. You know, there was nothing in the advert to say they were in Germany. I mean, it was just some soul band needs keyboard player. Ain't no half-stepping, we gotta do it good. Ain't no half-stepping, like you know you should.
Heatwave's Ain't No Half-Steppin', Johnny Wilder.
He was the first British guy that I had ever met personally. He spoke kind of funny, but he had a good sense of humor, and he was a very friendly guy. After meeting him and then seeing him play, I kind of determined he was a good enough player and an entertainer, and I just knew he would fit into the group.
Despite joining Heatwave as a keyboard player, Rod's attentions were already turning from playing to writing.
I used to sit at home in my flat in Germany and really try to do scales and, you know, but it's really as simple as this. Every time I used to sit down, I was so bored doing scales that by the time I'd finished an octave, my fingers had run off into some melody. And I basically remember to the day when I just said to myself, you ain't never gonna be a musician player. You can forget this. But obviously, I've got some leaning towards writing melody. And I don't actually think I ever looked back from that point, because then it became the main goal was to create music.
When he was happy with his tunes, Rod would play them to Johnny Wilder.
You know, after getting to know him much better, I would hear and became very interested in some of the original songs he had on these small little reel-to-reel tapes in his apartment. I was very interested because we weren't doing a lot of originals then. We were doing a lot of cover tunes. And so, you know, when he played the originals, I was really interested.
The original songs on those reel-to-reels would provide the material for Heatwave's first album, Too Hot to Handle, released in 1976. The first two singles off the record flopped. But the third would break the band in the UK and the States and give Rod his first huge international hit. It was called Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
It was just something I wrote for the band that worked. And funnily enough, on stage, that was never the great number. But Boogie Nights was a great record, and it took us to where we needed to go. It was a vehicle for us.
The first Heatwave album was produced by 70s star Barry Blue.
They didn't seem to be structured like any other kind of R&B funk songs I'd ever heard at that time. They seemed to have different melodies that you would expect, different kind of parts. All the parts were skillfully worked out. All the harmonies were worked out. It was really quite dynamic, really different. He writes like no other person I've ever met.
At the time of that first Heatwave LP, legendary producer Quincy Jones was in the States working on an R&B album with the Brothers Johnson, including this hit, Strawberry Letter 23. But Q had already turned his professional ear to the Heatwave sound coming from the other side of the Atlantic.
I had been listening to his record, the songs, and just the way they were presented, you know, really impressed me from the first time I heard it, because I don't miss much. You hear the good stuff, you know, right away.
Quincy's engineer was Bruce Swedine.
Quincy asked me to check out the Heatwave album that was such a big success in the late 70s. He said that Heatwave was Rod Temperton's band. Quincy said, listen to his stuff. So I went out and got the Heatwave record, and holy cow, I simply loved Rod's musical feeling, everything about it. Now, this was a really good band. Heatwave was a very hot band, but the concept of Rod's arrangements, his tunes, his songs, was exceedingly hip.
Back in England, Heatwave were touring after their success with Boogie Nights. With their slick American sound, many were surprised to discover who was writing the songs. Radio DJ John Holmes interviewed Rod around this time.
He looked undernourished. He looked as though he worked behind the counter at a fish and chip shop in Humberside. And certainly not the writer of such classic tracks as Boogie Nights and Always and Forever.
Always and forever, each moment with you is just like a dream to me that somehow came true. And I know tomorrow will still be the same, 'cause we've got a life of love that won't ever change. And every day, love me your own special way, melt all my heart away with a smile.
Always and Forever was fast becoming a classic ballad. Former Doobie Brother Michael McDonald worked with Rod in the late 80s and was also a big fan of the song.
That was probably one of my favorite tracks by them. I love the guy's voice, the singer in the band. And it was just a real, kind of one of the first real fresh approaches to R&B that I had come along in a while at that time. You know, seems like every band that makes a mark like that, they kind of do something that just hasn't been done in a while. Heatwave was one of those kind of bands. It was real traditional in its approach to R&B, but there was just some twist and some turn in the songs.
Every day, love me your own special way, melt all my heart away with a smile. You really care, and we'll say
Despite Always and Forever's romantic melody, Rod's working surroundings were still far from glamorous. Alan Kirk was a Yorkshire musician with Jimmy James and the Vagabonds, who were touring with Heatwave in the mid-70s.
The Always and Forever track was written on a Wurlitzer piano at the side of a pile of smelly washing early one morning, you know. Sorry to disappoint all the romantics.
He had small, very small flat, and there was no room for his organ, which I think was called Betsy, if I remember rightly.
Barry Blue.
So everything had to be done within the one room, and he had piles of washing, and he had the TV on top of the organ. And it was, I just don't know how he actually ever got to write anything, because it was a nightmare. He had trams running outside, and, you know, but he made it. He just absorbs himself in the music, and Rod seems to come up with these amazing songs.
It was purely an attempt to write a romantic ballad for the singer. There's no kind of hidden meaning behind it all. I'm sure a lot of people want to think that, but it was just a pretty song. And the funny thing about it was, back when I was working in England in bands before, I used to write all the music. Somebody else in the band would write the words. So when I went to live in Germany, if I was going to carry on writing, I had to write my own lyrics. And I absolutely hated it. And to be honest, still do to this day. And Always and Forever was the first lyric I wrote that got recorded for Heatwave.
In 1977, Heatwave followed up their smash hit first album with an equally strong second LP, Central Heating, with Barry Blue once again producing and Rod Temperton again behind the majority of the songs. The set included another huge-selling hit single with the by-now-familiar Heatwave sound and Rod Temperton hook. It was called Groove Line. Get that groove, Rod, as the keyboard player and writer, was working increasingly hard. Heatwave's Johnny Wilder.
There was a little room. We'd lock him up in the room, and there was a piano. He'd stay all night and all mornings and get a little sleep in the afternoon, so we'd go back and play at night in the club. But at the end of the gig, we'd lock him up in the room, and he would start writing.
I'd write there until the cleaner came to unlock the door and let me out at 7 a.m. I'd go over to the airport, have a bit of breakfast, go and get some sleep in the hotel and be back at 2 in the afternoon for rehearsal. Because we used to rehearse every day when we were in places like that. And we'd rehearse from 2 till about 6, go and eat, and then come back and play the gig.
By 1978, something had to give. Rod decided to quit playing in the band to concentrate on writing.
It was not a career decision in the sense of I knew what I was going to do. I had no idea where I was going. I remember standing on the side of the stage in, I think it was Birmingham, watching the new organ player. And then as the evening finished and the crowd applauded, I kind of waved goodbye to everybody and got the train back to London. And at that time I thought, what am I going to do now? You know, and I figured, well, if I'm any good, if somebody will call me, I guess, you know, at some point.
Rod continued to write for Heatwave, but Johnny Wilder knew he would go on to even greater things.
I had no reservations about him going on to write because I knew the more and more we played on the road and he wanted to have time where he could write, I didn't doubt that he would do better things with writing.
Quincy Jones had recently finished The Wiz, a black musical version of The Wizard of Oz. Former child star Michael Jackson had played the part of the Scarecrow. Now it was time to record Michael's first adult LP, and Quincy decided to take a punt on the mysterious Englishman behind the Heatwave sound.
I called him, I remember on a weekend or something, and I was getting ready to do Michael and Rufus and Shaka. So I asked him to write, I think, two songs for Michael and three for Shaka and Rufus, if he could.
One night we were in the studio working and the phone call came through and I was really shocked, you know, because, I mean, this is guy, I used to listen to his records on a Saturday afternoon in Cleethorpes with my mates, you know, round in the back bedroom. And I was really, you know, flattered.
In the end, Rod penned three songs. Quincy loved them and took them all for the Michael Jackson album. They were Off the Wall, Rock With You, and Burn This Disco Out. Was busy writing for Heatwave's third album in New York, so Quincy flew him to L.A. at weekends to work on the off-the-wall sessions. The engineer was Bruce Swedeen.
Quincy's car pulls into the parking lot of the studio, and in the back seat was this exhausted-looking dude in a wrinkled trench coat. His eyes were red-rimmed with fatigue, and he was staring into space. A Marlboro cigarette with a 3-inch ash was dangling from his lower lip. Now that was my first impression of Rod Temperton.
I do remember the very first session for Off the Wall. This was on the Saturday that they flew me in from New York. And Quincy had said to me on the phone a couple of days before, asked me what kind of musicians I needed to record the tracks. So I said, I'm two guitar players and a keyboard player, drums, bass. And I arrived that afternoon, came from the airport directly to the studio. Quincy met me at the door, basically took me in the main studio room where all the musicians were getting ready to play, and said, "Here's Rod, hit it."
First heard you say, hey, 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 this guy, he's got his thing, he's got it together. The magic, you know when magic strikes, when you're just saying, hey, this is the past, even any kind of human thing, it's like a kind of divine connection. I know it.
It wasn't just Quincy who was feeling the magic. Michael Jackson loved Rod's three songs, especially the third single, Rock With You.
Rod Temperton, Quincy told him to write a song about the rock, which was the dance. But he wanted to have a double meaning about rocking the girl and doing the dance, the rock. A little nasty, but that's that. And he came up with the song, which was wonderful. It's one of my favorite songs on the album.
That when you heard one of those songs, you said, that's a hit. It's crazy.
Jazz keyboardist George Duke was one of a host of great musicians to play on the now legendary Off the Wall Sessions.
For that time, he had his finger on the trigger and he became a part of it and really, as far as I'm concerned, directed it because that was his material. There was something there, something special. And of course, it was a great time for Michael because with the melodies he was able to sing and with that master production behind him and the songs to go with it, there was no way that it just couldn't be a marriage made in heaven. All I'm saying is, boy, they had a time.
You're listening to The Invisible Man, the Rod Temperton story on BBC Radio 2. Off the Wall was a massive international success, setting Michael Jackson on his way to becoming the biggest solo star in pop history and going on to sell 20 million albums worldwide. The triumvirate of producer Quincy Jones, engineer Bruce Swedeen, and songwriter Cleethorpe's very own Rod Temperton were now the A-team. Next on their hit list was George Benson.
I met Rod Temperton at the studio with Quincy Jones. I had heard that he was the mastermind behind this Rock With You, and I thought it was a masterpiece of music, you know. Right on the money, it had all the things a person looks for in a song, you know, a story, a good hook, both musical and lyric-wise. And I just thought it was a genius writer. I said, man, I got to meet this guy.
So in 1980, Rod and Quincy began work on George's Give Me the Night album, which included five Rod Temperton songs. Amongst them were the UK top 10 hit Love Times Love and this instrumental track, Off Broadway. Then there was the title song, which very nearly never happened at all. George Benson.
The most incredible thing that happened during that album was we were finished with the record, and we thought we had something that was very decent. And I went over to hear some of the takes, and Quincy said, George, we got one more tune. I said, no, we had been working on it for 3 months. Every day for 3 months, in the studio all day, you know, and half of the night. And he said, we got one more tune. We think it's really a great song, and we think that this song belongs in this album. And it was the title song, Give Me the Night. And it was so incredible. It rocked from bar one, you know. At the beginning of Give Me the Night, there was the little hook, bling, bling. It was a party record, and it had several hooks. The first one actually launched careers. The one I mentioned with the guitar, bum, bum. It launched Luther Vandross's career. That's why he wrote the song. Because he fell in love with that little hook.
Rod and Quincy were again able to call on a huge array of talent in the sessions, including Herbie Hancock and Patty Austin. Quincy still sees this song as one of their greatest achievements.
Give Me the Night was serious, you know, because to me it was a mixture of bebop, with Patty Austin, you know. It's just a very unique concept during that, especially during that period.
Patty Austin was a vital component of the sound produced by Quincy, Bruce, and Rod, and provided the complex backing vocals for Give Me the Night.
It was always a challenge, and that's always what was fun with working with Rod, because you knew that whatever he gave you was going to be really difficult and complicated and challenging, and that's what I love. That's the way, that's where I live, baby. Give Me
the
Night.
The album hit the top three in America and established Rod's reputation as a hit machine. That was further enhanced by his U.S. number one single, Baby Come to Me, sung by James Ingram and Patty Austin.
Thinking back in time when love was only in my mind, I realize ain't no second chance, you got to hold on to romance. Don't let it slide.
Rod altered my career by writing me a number one record. So That's it. That's how he did it. And then he didn't do it ever again. It's very depressing. Oh, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Just kidding.
Baby, come to me. Let me put my arms around you. This was meant to be. And I'm also glad I found you. Need you every day. Gotta have your love around me, baby. Always stay. Cause I can't go back to living without you.
By the early 80s, Rod's partnership with Quincy Jones had become the hottest in the industry. They produced the enormous hit single Stomp for the Brothers Johnson, later the basis for the successful stage musical. And in 1982, Love Is in Control for disco diva Donna Summer. There's no doubt Rod had his finger on the trigger.
I was working so much, I didn't even know half the things that were going on. It was a very exciting time, and one story I always remember with Quincy. I don't drive a car, and he doesn't drive a car either. So the two of us would jump in a taxi, go all the way down to Hollywood to be the first people to get the copy of the Billboard to see where we were on the charts that week. It was a great time, you know.
Away from Quincy's productions, Rod provided songs for the likes of Karen Carpenter, Stephanie Mills, Herbie Hancock, Bob James, Aretha Franklin, and for Manhattan Transfer, the UK Top 20 track Spice of Life. There's no doubting which was the biggest project of them all. Off the Wall had become the all-time highest-selling album for a black artist and, thanks to Rod's songs, had made Michael Jackson a worldwide star. It was time to start on the hugely anticipated follow-up, Thriller.
I wrote probably about 35, 40 ideas, Polaroids for the songs. Quincy picked five tunes, I think, and said, let's go to Michael's house. So we'd go to his house and then do a demo with Michael and put his voice on it, just to get the feel of how it all sounded.
I have something I want to tell you.
Yes, Michael?
From that, we picked three of my songs to actually record.
I'm not like other guys.
Of course not. That's why I love you.
No, I mean I'm different.
Once again, Bruce Swedeen was the engineer.
At that time, young people were only interested in video games. And I remember this like it was yesterday. We all walked into the control room ready to begin production on Thriller. Quincy first, then Michael, then me and Rod. And Quincy turned to us and said, okay, guys, we're here to get the kids out of the video arcades and back into the record store.
Are you all right?
Shut away!
Rod again wrote the title song to the album, but it wasn't all plain sailing.
Originally, when I did my demo, I called it Starlight. Quincy said to me, well, you managed to come up with the title for the last album, see what you can do for this album. I said, oh, great. So
I went back to the hotel. I wrote 200 or 300 titles for this song. And then I came up with the title Midnight Man. And he said, that's kind of more, you know, a bit mystery, a bit more where we should be heading. And so I said, okay, let me think about it. And so the next morning I woke up and I just said this word. Something in my head just said, this is the title. You could visualize it on the top of the Billboard charts. You know, you could see the merchandising for this one word, how it jumped off the page. So I knew I had to write it as Thriller. And I wrote all the words very quickly, then went to the studio and we did it.
It's close to midnight. Something evil's lurking in the dark. Another moonlight. You see a sight that almost stops your heart. You try to scream, but dare I take the sound before you make it. And you start to freeze as horror looks you right between the eyes.
Vincent Price rap at the end of the track is one of the record's most distinctive features. Bruce Swedeen again.
Rod Temperton wrote a brilliant Edgar Allan Poe type of spiel in the taxi cab on the way to the session.
Just got the pen and paper out, and Quincy rang and said, have you got it? You got something? I said, yeah, I'm working on it. Don't worry about it. I'll have something. You know. So I then started to write this rap for Thriller. And I got one verse done and then jumped in the cab. And I'm off to the studio for the session. I'm frantically writing in the back. And when I got to the studio, I saw this limousine pull up out the front and out steps Vincent Price. And I said to the cab driver, go around the back, go around the back. You know, so we raced around the back. And I jumped out, went through the back door, grabbed hold of the secretary and said, photocopy this, quick. and raced in and put it on the music stand. And Vincent walked in and sat down and, you know, just hit it, two takes. And he was absolutely amazing. And that was a great moment for me. I really enjoyed that.
Now, when the chips are down like that, that's when you find out what true genius is really about.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. From every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver. For no mortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
Michael Jackson's Thriller is now the highest selling solo album in the history of recorded music.
For the first time in my entire career, I feel like I've accomplished because I'm in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Thriller has gone on to sell over 40 million copies worldwide and remains by far the highest selling album of all time. Michael Jackson took the plaudits, but Rod Temperton, the unknown songwriter from Cleethorpes, had played a central role in creating musical history. It was also the peak of his working relationship with Quincy Jones.
I've never, ever enjoyed working with anybody more. He covers my back, you know. I will his, I'll do anything for him, you know. He's a very special man. And we've got that same junkie work ethic. We used to smoke 160 cigarettes a night. People run from us, man, I'm telling you, because we were like vampires, you know.
I mean, I'm from Cleethorpes. He's from Seattle. Where is the meeting of the minds here? But from walking in the studio with him, I would think within an hour, it'd like we'd known each other from being kids. And we are very different personalities, but we clicked. We've been together ever since. And I love him to death.
When I'm by your side, ooh, every moment takes me to paradise. Darling, let me hold you. I warm you in my arms and melt your fears away. Show you all the magic that
Baby Be Mine, another of Rod's tracks on Thriller. Two decades have passed since the phenomenon that was Thriller. Its unrivaled success catapulted Rod Temperton to the very top, a position from which he would never have to work again. But keep working, he has. He continued to collaborate with Quincy Jones as they carried their success onto the screen, writing the Oscar-nominated soundtrack for The Color Purple in 1985 and the TV theme tune for that film star, Oprah Winfrey. 2 years later, Rod was back in the charts thanks to the buddy film Running Scared, which included his hit single Sweet Freedom. That song won Rod a prestigious Ivor Novello Award and was a huge success for former Doobie Brother Michael McDonald.
I remember thinking when I heard the track, I go, man, this track is a hit, you know, all by itself. You know, if I can just get from the beginning to the end in one piece, I'm home free, you know. Then when I heard the first mix of it, I remember thinking, you know, wow, it just sounded so good. That really opened the door to us, my band, coming over and playing in the UK all these years later.
Yeah, that's one of my favourites, Sweet Freedom. It was a nice one to do. After Running Scared, I realised that although it's great to write tunes for a movie, you just don't feel the same way as you do when you finished a record, you know, you created. Because, let's be honest, the first reason for it is to service the movie. It's not about your music, really, and shouldn't be. You know, I went back at that point to really to doing a record.
Those records have included, in recent years, a reworking of some old classics on Quincy's Juke Joint, and new songs with Britain's Misha Paris and Sita Garrett, herself the writer of Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror.
He just thrives on the work. That's all that matters. And when he's there 110%. And when he's not, he's visiting one of his homes in different parts of the world, chilling. I just love that about him. Rod has the perfect life. I tell him all the time, I want to be him when I grow up.
Rod certainly has grown up. 30 years after it all began with Heatwave, he's back working with their first producer, Barry Blue. Their latest project is up-and-coming English singer Emily Friendship.
I'm ashamed to say I'm not one of the world's most clued up women on, you know, the old soul, the good stuff. But it did start to strike me when I had meetings and people would ask me who I'm writing with, and I'd say, you know, I'm working with a guy called Rod Temperton, and everybody said to me, you're working with Rod. When you're halfway through working on something yourself, it's like, okay, you did this and this and this and this and this.
Barry Blue.
The uniqueness about Rod is that he is just the same as he was before he was successful. He's just a really, really nice guy, as well as being possibly one of the top pop geniuses of our time.
One of the biggest things is to please yourself first. You have to love what you're creating. The first criteria is write something that you love first. And once you feel those hairs standing up on the back of your hand, you can go to the world.
He's one of the best and the brightest, I think, in time, in retrospect. The music that Heatwave did and all through the stuff that he did with Quincy will be probably some of the classic R&B of all time.
He's
like an invisible shadow over the whole music business, the whole culture. He's just interwoven in so many ways that we don't even know. He's like the air we breathe. It's in us, it's around us, but we don't even think about it. It's just there. That's kind of what Rod Temperton is to me, and I think to the world.
If you are fortunate enough to work with a man like Rod Temperton, it's going to be an experience that will last a lifetime, and it'll be something that you gladly would like to do again.
I have a favorite moment. The moment is when I finish the song. That is the moment. It's the biggest moment of all. Like, yesterday it didn't exist on this planet. Today it does.
There should be a parade for Rod in this country. He's been so successful. It's a shame to kind of hear that not so many people really know and appreciate what he's done. It's about time that they do. But, I mean, he won't like it.
When I finished with Emily, I shall sit at home and I shall relax and I shall watch a bit of telly, catch up on the news, and who knows, maybe somebody will phone us, hopefully.
The Invisible Man, the Rod Temperton story, was a Wise Buddha production for BBC Radio 2.